Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Another interruption. That's what it felt like. I was humming along in my daily life routine when all of a sudden, boom, full stop. I got that call from a doctor I'd never met before telling me, you have cancer. My life changed that day in the middle of July 2017. My job changed from helping others become healthy, fit, and strong to now me being my only client with one goal, to beat cancer. Another interruption. I had another boom and full stop over 30 years ago when I was in the backseat of a car that took me 4 years to recover from. I was saved with the jaws of life cutting me out of that car. I worked hard to gain back my strength, regain my memory and vision, and learn to walk again. I was considered a miraculous recovery. All these years, I thought that was it. There was no way anything catastrophic could happen to me again. My dues were paid as far as I was concerned. That car I got into that night changed my life forever in so many ways. Done. Besides that, no one in my whole family had ever been diagnosed with breast cancer. This wasn't even on my radar. Colon cancer was on my radar because my mom lost her life to it at only 41 years old after a 9-week short battle. Going for my mammogram was just routine after my annual women's wellness exam. As I sat in the waiting room after I checked in, I was asked, do you want the new 3D mammo? It'll cost you $45 since insurance doesn't cover it. At first I said no and explained that no one in my family has ever had breast cancer. And honestly, spending an extra $45 that day wasn't in my tight budget. I'm not sure what it was, the look in the eyes of the administrative assistant or some divine intervention from above. But before I knew it, I was pulling out my credit card to pay for the 3D mammogram. That was on a Friday. On Monday morning, I got a call. Boom. Full stop. Another interruption. Good evening, everyone, to Accent On. My name is Chrissy Lomax, and I'm honored to be sitting in as guest host for Ilona Europa every Monday in December from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm grateful to Ilona for providing me this opportunity to create a forum of experience to help in the many areas of life that are affected by a cancer diagnosis. What I just read to you was from the introduction of the book I wrote since I finished my cancer treatment 15 months ago, and the book is called Another Interruption, My Journey Through HER2-New Breast Cancer. I'm not a doctor or a medical professional. I'm coming to you from a place of experience. I have the experience of a fitness professional, a nutrition specialist, a Pilates instructor, a marathon coach, a weight loss coach, a motivational speaker, and now, most importantly, a survivor. I beat HER2-New positive breast cancer. I know what it takes to get to a finish line. I looked at this new interruption as the marathon of my life, for my life. I had to prepare, train, endure, listen to my body, properly nourish myself, and focus on the goal. Visualize the finish line and trust my team to support me. There is no way that after everything I have gone through in my life that cancer was going to take me down. My hope is that over the next 5 weeks of this program, you will be inspired to live your best life cancer-free. My mission is to provide a cancer survivor, cancer patient, partner, family member of a cancer patient, or anyone looking to take steps to avoid diagnosis, some support, ideas, inspiration to help us make it through treatment, recovery, and healing. You'll meet survivors telling their stories and hear from guests each week that help cancer patients in many ways that are affected by a diagnosis. For this episode and this show tonight, I would like to thank our sponsor. And this is the perfect time of the year for this this sponsor. Product Confidential. Fine custom-made jewelry inspired by your imagination, crafted by master artisans. You can call them at 818-597-2601 for further information or check them out on the web at productconfidential.com. I have two guests tonight for my first show, and I'm really excited and so grateful that you came here to the station to be with me for this. First, I'd like to introduce you to David Schwartz. Hello, David.
Howdy.
And please introduce yourself to everyone.
You know, I gave her a whole introduction for me.
And I thought now, it was time they heard a different voice. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist who has a private practice in Westlake Village, California. He's worked with cancer patients in his practice and has also experienced cancer,
I have lost friends and very, very close people in my life.
Yes. Okay. Well, we have a lot of questions that we'd like to ask you about. I'd also like to introduce our other guest tonight, because we will have a bit of a conversation happening. And this is Laura Quick. Thank you so much, Laura, for being here tonight. And you're a survivor, so you're a very special guest for me tonight. Yes. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I don't really know what to say. I've known Chrissy for years. I trained for marathons with her. I trained to get healthier and fitter.
Yeah.
And then I was diagnosed with cancer. And it is a full stop. It is a time when you have to just put everything on hold and focus on getting through what
you do. And that's what we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And hopefully help others, you know, that are working on getting through this as well. And also over here is my husband, Joe Primo, who is actually a recording engineer. So it's like, okay, you come and you do all that stuff so I can just be with my guests. So thank you so much for being here as well. And not to mention, you were part of this journey as well, because when somebody is diagnosed, everybody with that person is diagnosed. The family is diagnosed. The circle of friends is diagnosed. And it becomes a whole project for everybody to make it through. So what do you feel is important for people to know when someone in the family is diagnosed with cancer, David?
Well, as you've just said, it is a full stop. It is basically a life-changing, life-threatening situation. And as a result, you really have to be sensitive to the fact that if you are, the question is about if you are a family member of somebody or you are the person, the person's going to be overwhelmed. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. And so as a result, that overwhelm is going to translate into all these different areas of their lives. And it's really a whole family situation, because you've got the person who has cancer, and then you have all of the turmoil that takes place around that. And I am sure that Joe, you would agree mm-hmm. that this was a family situation with you and Chrissy.
Absolutely, yes.
And there are so many different types of ways that people cope with things and people handle things. And one thing I will say is that basically, unless you're the person going through it, it's very, very hard. I have not been through cancer myself. I have had very, very close friends and people in my life who have been fighting this terrible, terrible disease. And basically, I don't know how they feel. And I think that as family members who are just trying to help, you really don't want to hear, if you're the person with the illness, you don't want to hear, I know exactly how you feel, because they don't.
Exactly. Plus, everybody deals with it differently. For example, when my mother had cancer, she didn't want anyone to know. Her big indicator was when she lost her hair. And it became a physical manifestation of something that she had kept private.
Wow, yeah.
And suddenly she had to deal with it. Whereas I posted it on Facebook.
Yeah.
I was very open about it, and I wanted the support of people around me.
Yes.
And my family wasn't comfortable with that particularly, but that was my choice, and I have never regretted it.
And that's why it's such an individual thing.
Absolutely.
It's an individual choice, an individual way you want to handle it to the best of your ability to handle it.
Right.
And probably the most you want is to feel empowered on some level, because you are so out of control when that happens that you want to somehow find a way to be empowered within that situation,
sure,
both with how you share it, how you receive support, and how you also take part in whatever your treatment is.
Right. And it's very strange. I know when I was first diagnosed that I thought I was okay. I mean, they told me immediately I needed to have a mastectomy. And I after that, it was like Charlie Brown's teacher talking. You know, I didn't really take in anything else after that. Yeah. And I was driving back home, and I stopped at Kentucky Fried Chicken, which I never eat at. And I bought the three pieces of chicken, and then I parked in the parking lot.
Laura!
I parked in the
good
parking lot of a bar and ate it like I was...
Wow.
Like I had been out of the desert.
You were out of character.
And then I went in the bar, and a friend of mine was in there, and he turned around and said, "I just got here." And I said, "I have cancer." Really loud. And everyone in the bar turned around, and then I started laughing. And someone just handed me a glass of wine.
Wow.
But I didn't realize until that moment... that I wasn't really processing. Mm-hmm. It was just fully reactionary.
Yeah. It's overwhelming.
And I didn't really know from there. I really didn't know who do you tell and how do you tell them? It's sort of like you don't really want to bring it up. And so, I mean, telling an entire bar full of people.
Well, that sounds like something you would do though, Laura, to be honest with you. For me, what was hard for us when I got that call, was that the best way to do it was to do it in a blog. And I ended up starting a family blog that I would send out to the family. And it helped everyone. It helped Joe and I.
Oh, sure.
I was able to verbalize everything while I blubbered through writing it all, you know, because you can read it even if somebody's blubbering writing it out. So I wrote that out to the family. And I kept that up throughout the whole year of treatment because I was in treatment for a whole year. And I kept that up through the treatment, and that made a big difference to me. And it helped them because they thanked me for helping them understand what a cancer patient is going through.
Right.
And David and I have talked about this, there should be the top 10 list of things to not say to a cancer patient. Yeah, and I'm sure that will come up over the next hour because there are some things that really hit somebody that's going through treatment as very insensitive. Like, for example, something that I noticed when somebody would find out, oh, you have cancer. And before you could even tell them what type of cancer, because there are so many types of cancer and everybody's cancer diagnosis, everybody's cancer is different. Yeah. Everybody's treatment is different, just the way as everybody's delivery of the information is different. Like we're going to tell everybody in a different way. You know, you ran into a bar, yelled it out. I've got cancer. Yeah, you didn't pay for a drink all night, did you? And for me, I was writing because that is what I do. I'm a writer. Yeah. And I wrote and I was able to really be articulate and get everything out that it helped everyone else understand. But the thing that people want to ask you right away is what stage are you? And I realized, and I couldn't figure it out at first when I was in the first few months of telling people that I would bump into somewhere, that was the first question they asked. And then I realized it was because then that gave them some way that they could judge how you were.
How sick are you exactly?
So you're going to be fine. My aunt had that. It's like, how do you know? You know, it's amazing how you go through that all the time with people wanting to know what stage are you?
Right.
And meanwhile, not even knowing what type of cancer you have because there's so many different types.
Right.
So, Laura, what type of cancer were you diagnosed with?
I'm estrogen positive, progesterone positive, HER2 positive. But I was null, almost null on the HER2 part.
Okay, so, and that's what I am, HER2 new positive, which is the most aggressive, fastest growing cancer.
And they did numerous additional tests and genetic panels to find out if I was predisposed to the HER2 positive because they weren't sure whether or not it would have changed the diagnosis for treatment.
Right.
Depending on whether or not I would have to do the Herceptin for a year or not. And they decided against it at the last minute, but I still had several rounds of chemo.
Oh, okay. Yes, I was on the Herceptin, and I want to just talk about Herceptin and the importance of fundraising. Joe and I moved to California in the 1990, 89, 90, and I went for work, and I started catering, and I was catering at a place out in Westlake Village that was called the Plug Nickel, and there was a cancer fundraising group that would have luncheons there, and I was catering that group, and I wanted to be a part of it because I had lost mom not that long before then, and I wanted to fundraise Let's make a difference, right? So I jumped on board with the Johnson Cancer Center at UCLA to fundraise for them. And on one of these trips we did, we got on a bus and we went down to UCLA in Westwood to listen to Dr. Susan Love and Dr. Dennis Slamon. And this was about 1994 or 95. And we were listening to Dr. Susan Love and Dr. Dennis Slamon talk about what Dr. Slamon had just discovered, the antiviral for the oncogene that was killing a lot of women with this aggressive form of breast cancer. And he said it was the very first gene-targeted therapy. Well, we left that lecture so motivated, so inspired. Holy smokes, they're going to get cancer now from the genes. They're finally going to be able to target the genes. And it was the very first gene-targeted therapy. And even though it wasn't for colon cancer, it was for breast cancer, I thought, well, it's going to eventually show up in all the cancers. So I've got to do something because they need more money for fund, you know, for FDA approval. So I thought, well, best thing, food, make a cookbook. So it always comes to food. So I did this cookbook, 100 of my recipes, 100 of my cousin's recipes as a real chef, and then 300 recipes from family, friends, members of the Johnson Cancer Center Foundation, and they supported me in getting this book out there. And we sold over 1,000 copies of that book, mostly out of the trunk of my car, honestly. And got that check to UCLA, the Johnson Cancer Center, for Dr. Dennis Slamon to continue his research and get FDA approval. And in 1998, it was approved for patients with, it was 2010, I believe. By 2010, every patient with HER2-positive breast cancer was then administered Herceptin. And in 2017, I was diagnosed with that breast cancer. Like, how crazy is that? Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so the importance of fundraising, it couldn't be more important.
Research is invaluable.
Absolutely. Research and getting enough money in for the FDA approval, which is another one of the things that I want to talk about. Okay, so when you have your families come to you, mm-hmm. What is the main concern when they're coming to you for support and they're dealing with a family member that is going through treatment?
Everybody is different. Just like you two just talked about different ways of dealing with it, everybody's different. And as a therapist, I can only give kind of general guidelines as to basically how I... Was that something? Or, okay. I can only give general guidelines that basically people can follow and then tailor to what works for them and their families. Like, for example,
yes,
I think it's important people listen. Often I think that what happens is you tell them that you have cancer and they're quick to say, you're going to be fine, you're going to be all right, we're going to, you know, and they're not hearing who you are, what you're dealing with, whatever fear you have, and all of those things that let you feel heard and understood and cared about. And I think that it's so important that somebody who's diagnosed with cancer gets the support of their family so that their family truly sees them and doesn't gloss over it because of their family's fear. The family has to be willing to hear it, to be able to be there with the pain, with the fear, with all that takes place with the person who has cancer. The family needs to be respectful that this person is going through a terribly complex and difficult journey.
And then that's different from anybody else's, even if it's the same cancer as somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. And another thing that I believe, and this is just something that I instinctually believe, is that people want normalcy. Once you get that somebody is sick, like you wouldn't want me to somehow not acknowledge that you were having this going on.
Right.
But once you knew I got it, then all of a sudden, would you not want to be treated like I would have treated you before you were sick?
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Because so many times I think one of the mistakes that people make is they feel so badly for the person that they shift the way they relate to them.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden the person's being treated differently than what their relationship had been.
And I think that shows up in friendships with people too, where the people that you expect to be normal with you aren't. And the people that you don't really think are going to be there for you are suddenly there for you in ways that you didn't expect.
And the people that were there for you all the time suddenly don't even call and don't even say hello. And there's people that I just lost out of my life completely.
There are people who I think they just don't know what to say, or maybe they just don't know how to say it, mm-hmm. or how to be there without it being about. But it's, even though it's a huge part of your life still goes on, and you still have some.
And people don't always know.
No,
they don't. They it
it's
overwhelms
okay
them.
That. It's okay to say, "Look, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to, but I'm here for you."
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
And just go ahead and do something for the cancer patient. That's another thing. Never really ask, because cancer patients always can say, no, I'm fine. I don't know. It's like, maybe, I could use a new outfit. You know, maybe I could have asked for something like that. But I would always say, no, I'm fine. But there were times when I just had somebody show up with all kinds of chopped up sautéed vegetables.
Yeah.
And containers for the freezer for me, so that I had my vegetables to go with. Yeah, a lot of different things. How, David, would you recommend somebody deal with the post-traumatic stress disorder that does come with a cancer diagnosis?
Again, everybody is different. So for me, if somebody has post-traumatic stress, presuming that most people have fear and most people have worry that something will come back, again, listening, hearing, being seen is very important. It's very easy, for example, if I can't deal with the fact that you've had the potential of having your cancer come back, I can slough off what you say. If you tell me you're afraid, if I'm a family member, you start to talk to me, I may be so overwhelmed as a family member that I can't hear you.
Right.
And so as a result, you're not able to feel connected and understood and have someone who can help you have some sharing of that weight that
you have. It's so important. You know, back to my mom, who I spoke about earlier, she didn't want anyone to help her. She didn't want to acknowledge that she needed any help. By the time she came and told our family she had cancer, she'd already been to a support group meeting and asked them what questions she should ask her oncologist before she was actually diagnosed. So she came home and she said, basically, I have breast cancer and I'm fine. I belong to a support group. I've asked all the questions I need to ask, and now we just go through with treatment and I'm done. And you're, as a family member, you're not sure what just happened, It was sort of a dump and run sort of strategy where we weren't supposed to ask about it, and she was supposed to just let us know what she wanted us to know.
And that was her way of dealing with it.
It was, and you had to be kind of okay with it. And since I didn't live locally, she would tell me, you're the person I'm going to call just to talk to about normal things. So if you want to know about the cancer, call your sisters. Which is a little strange, but you try to acknowledge that.
David was mentioning family, a lot of the family, family support. I did have family support, even though they're 3,000 miles away, most of them.
Yeah.
You know, I did the newsletter that I called it, and I sent that out with every detail of what was going on with me, and I did that about every week or every 2 weeks, or any time something came up, I would write again.
Right.
And then every 2 weeks, we did something on Skype that was called Global Culture Club, because we were from all over the world, you know, and we would meet on there. And then it was like the Brady Bunch window on the screen of the computer, you know, because we'd all be in the different boxes there and having it there. And so that was great family support. And even though some days I was just sitting there like a bag of bones with my little black chemo cap on, you know, I could barely sit up, but I had to do it. It made a difference to me to see them, to hear them, to know they were there with me. Now I know, Laura, you're a single woman. I have my husband.
Yeah.
He was with me through the whole experience. You're a single woman.
That was my biggest fear, actually.
How challenging is that to go through as a single woman? You also don't have a lot of family support.
I don't. And that was my biggest concern. Also, I work for myself, and would I be able to work during time of dealing with the cancer? There's just a lot of things around that were very anxiety producing.
Yes.
And what surprised me, there were a couple of things that surprised me. One is my neighbors were amazing.
Thank
I mean,
goodness.
Sometimes they would knock on the door, I'd open the door and they'd hand me a bag of groceries.
Oh.
Or, you know, they'd call and say, what are you in the mood for today? What can I make you to eat? And people came by. I have a chicken farm, and people came by and took care of the chickens for me. I was they weren't sure if I got neutropenic, whether I'd be able to stay at the house or I'd have to move to a hotel. So I had to do everything I could to stay as healthy as I could.
Yes.
So I could stay at home. And I couldn't afford to stay at a hotel, to be honest. Also, my friend Steve called me up and said, I'm coming out. I would never have asked him to do this, but he came out for 6 weeks and got me through the mastectomy and the post-mastectomy horrible period.
Oh, yeah.
And then he stayed until I had my first chemo, and then he had to leave, and then he came back from my last round of chemo and stayed another 6 weeks.
Wow.
And it was great. Plus, he also became an extra in a movie. So,
he got some work while he was here, too. You never know. Come to California. Anything can happen.
His first day, he got a role on a walk-on role for Haunting of Sharon Tate.
Wow. Ooh, that sounds...
Although I think he may have ended up on the cutting room floor.
I also think that it's important that family members recharge their own batteries. Because a lot of times a family member will be so absorbed in trying to care for the cancer patient, especially if it's difficult chemo and difficult radiation, and won't necessarily prioritize their own well-being.
Right.
And their own well-being is vital, because if they're not okay, they don't have anything to be able to then give to take care of the person or help the person.
It's tough, I think, for caregivers to balance out giving care and taking care of themselves and feeling like they can't take that time as their own. But they really need to. And
yeah, you were really lucky to have a friend come and save her 6 weeks.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Made it so much easier.
Yeah. Now, did you have radiation as well?
I did not.
Okay.
I had double mastectomy, so I didn't have to have radiation.
Okay.
And
was that a choice to have the double mastectomy?
Yes.
Okay.
It was funny because the first thing he said was, you need to have a mastectomy. Your cancer is in three places and I can't get clean margins.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, can you take them both? And the surgeon kind of reeled back a little bit and said, yeah, I think so. And I said, because I don't want to do this twice, you know, and I just as soon have them both gone at the same time.
Yeah.
And stuff. So it was a weird, I couldn't do reconstruction at the same time. I didn't get to really decide between a mastectomy or not. Those are sort of the two choices you can make once you've diagnosed with cancer, generally, but not always. And I think that was sort of stuck with me as being a little bit of a, I didn't get mine, you know, because I didn't get to choose. But I would have probably chosen anyway, and I'm surprisingly okay not having breasts. Although I do question if I'm still a mammal.
Yeah, you probably have a better golf swing now.
My archery is much
better. I always blamed my golf swing on you know.
On boobs.
Yeah. They're in the way. Yeah. Well, now my treatment was, you know, was different, and they right away put me into treatment.
With radiation?
No, with
chemotherapy.
And I had carboplatin, Perjeta, Taxotere, and then Herceptin. And I had 6 rounds of that. And they started that right away after my diagnosis. I went in for the port implant. And thank goodness, because they would just plug me into that, because I got infused every 3 weeks for a whole year. But the 6 weeks of the 6 rounds of chemotherapy, which was almost 5 months, that was pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
That was pretty aggressive. I would have 10 days where I was pretty well in a tunnel. I called it going into the tunnel. I would go into the tunnel about day 4 of treatment. It would be 4 days of infusion, and then I would go into the tunnel and stay there, you know. And it was a long, dark tunnel, but I would stay there because that would keep me healthy. And then when I had my good days and came out of the tunnel, I had about 10 days of good days to get out there and do things and cook and buy the right foods and make healthy bars and do all kinds of things like that to get me set up for the bad days, you know. So that's how they did it, because they said, if we put you into chemotherapy right now, chances are by the time you finish your 6 rounds of chemotherapy, the mass, mine was not a lump,
It couldn't be felt by anybody. Mm-hmm. It was a mass. It might be shrunk or even possibly gone. So that was something that they hoped for during the chemotherapy. So I did the 6 rounds of chemotherapy and then went in and got the surgery after that. Okay.
Ah, see, now mine was the other way around.
And they went in and there was nothing there.
Yeah. Wow.
Nothing there. And this was 5 centimeter mass of HER2-new positive breast cancer, which is aggressive, fast growing. There was nothing there. And it was funny because Joe and I went into the follow-up after the surgery, right? Because the first question after I came out of, you know, anesthesia to my doctor standing at my bedside was, did you get it all? Because that's exactly what my mom said, you know. But the thing was, we lied to her and said yes. Oof. You know, and then 9 weeks later she died because she was just filled with cancer. Wow. They couldn't get it all. And so that stuck in my mind too for months. Are they lying to me? Am I really dying? We lied to my mom, you know. But anyway, that was my first question. Did they get it all? And she said, it looks like we did, you know. And when we went to the follow-up appointment the week after that surgery, she said, you are PCR. And Joe and I just mouths open, looked at her. Huh? She said, you don't know what that means, do you? And we said, no. She said, that means pathologic complete response.
Oh.
You had the best possible outcome from your treatment that we could have ever hoped for. It couldn't have been any better. So the cavity where the ground zero was, they also removed a lymph node. The cavity where ground zero was, they just insert an implant now that over time the tissues grow around and it will dissolve. So I kept both the girls here.
That's good.
And although one tends to be a little bit bigger than the other one now because it's still swollen. But so that's kind of what they did. And then once I recovered from that, I did, as an insurance policy, go in for, I think it was 35 rounds of radiation. Yes, I was toasted. Yes.
Wow.
But as I had amazing oncology team, I'm really grateful to UCLA. And Dr. Ashuri is the most amazing oncologist. I was very lucky to have the dream team on board. I actually did. As we found out and went through the year of treatment, we did have the dream team. We had Dr. Maggie DeNomi, who is one of the top best breast surgeons in the USA on my team, okay? And Dr. Paul Miller, my radiation oncologist. And according to him, and he knows, I call him Dr. ALTB, Dr. A Little Too Blunt, but it was perfect because he would tell us everything. Joe and I often would leave his office like deer in the headlights, just stared. We wouldn't even talk all the way home because all we could keep hearing were the words he said, you know. He said, when you walked in here, you were a ticking time bomb, you know, yeah. So, wow. he was right on. I love it, man. He just said it like it is, doctor, a little too blunt. And I just love him. And you know what? It comes from a place from him, though. He was just an 8-year-old kid when his dad came home from the hospital. They told him, your dad has cancer. He said, that's all we knew, and we watched him die.
Wow.
He said, wow. That's why I tell you everything. And I can't tell you how grateful I am that he tells us everything.
It's funny how the first time I went in to have chemo, I was very nervous, and I was by myself.
Oh.
And I went in, and they hooked me up to. I didn't have a port because I only had 4 rounds of chemo,
okay.
So I just did it through my. But my veins are crap now.
Yes.
But I went in. They set me up, and they started a bag dripping, and I immediately started to feel nauseous. Like, oh my God, I don't feel well. And there were 3 other women in the room, and they all started talking to me. And I looked over and realized it was saline. It was all in my head. I sucked myself out. And so the woman came around. She's like, here's the anti-nausea. And then, you know, we'll be starting soon with your chemo. And I thought, okay, you got to get a grip. You got to really get a grip.
Right. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, there were 3 women in the room. And one of them was a 2-time breast cancer survivor, now fighting liver cancer.
Wow.
And she said, what are you on? What are you on this time? And I said, Cytoxin and Taxotere. She said, oh, baby chemo. And I said, oh, I thought to myself, well, this is good. This is like chemo light. It's not going to be as bad as anything else. So I went all the way through my rounds of chemo. And when I went back in July or August, I went and saw my oncologist. And I said, well, thank God for that baby chemo. And he looked at me and said, I wish you'd stop calling it that, because that chemo would have killed you as much as what she was taking would have killed her. It's yeah. not baby chemo. Yeah. You had no less cancer than anyone else. You were treated no less aggressively than anyone else. But it helped me yes. psychologically to believe this was nothing. It was
for
baby
the, for the rounds of chemo yet. Yeah. Oh, she's going to be fine with this, like baby and aspirin.
And that brings up attitude. Attitude is important. And sure. I would ask you two, how did you, Chrissy, you are one of the most positive people I know.
Thank
so
you.
I'm not sure this Absolutely. Question applies to you. I've known Chrissy 20 years. And
more than 20 years.
Yeah, more than 20 years and very, very positive. Laura, how did you keep up the positive energy, or at least the energy to continue down the road and hopefully still live your life while you were doing it?
I don't really know. I think I'm pretty positive also. And I just sort of looked at it as, you know, you get through it, you got the other side. So I had a trip to Cuba planned. I'm a big traveler. And I wouldn't cancel it, even though I knew there was no way in hell that I could go. And they had already offered, like, we can take you by mule from city to city. And I thought, you know, come on. It was a scientific research project. The last thing they need to be doing is lugging me around, because I'm not healthy enough to lug myself around. So I kept it on the books and wouldn't cancel it, because it gave me something to look forward to. And so having something to look forward to made all of the difference. So as soon as I finished chemo, a friend of mine had organized for me to go to Duke University has a Blue Ribbon Cancer retreat. So she had signed me up for the retreat. And I had just finished chemo at the time, and I could hardly fly out there. But she crowdsourced all my college friends to pay for it. So it cost me nothing.
Wow.
And she let me, she's also a cancer survivor. And then as soon as I finished the chemo and felt healthy enough, which was October of last year, I took off for 3 months in Asia and just took off to see if I could have still the life that I wanted to have. Because as I told Chrissy earlier, I had just been accepted into the Peace Corps, and they found my cancer in a routine mammogram that I was having to be able to go into the Peace Corps. And prior to that, my only concern was whether or not I'd be able to use a squat toilet for 2 years. So, you know, this sort of turned everything around. And
it's amazing how your priorities shift so quickly. Your whole perspective shifts
Absolutely.
So quickly. And it's overwhelming. It's just overwhelming.
And you don't know, as you go into it, you really don't know where you're going to be able to continue your normal life, and when you're going to have to deal
absolutely.
With everything.
I thought, well, gee, I just got to get this under, get this routine happening with the treatment, because I have clients to train. I have classes to teach. I have to exercise,
right.
Holy moly, I'm telling you. And then it's like, what do you mean I can't do any upper body for a month? just all the different things that happen. So, being a fitness professional, I had to create routines and that will all be in my book, sometimes right in bed with tubing and Pilates ring and whatever you can use. You just had to exercise to make the chemotherapy process through your body and get it working. And so the deal was, as soon as I was diagnosed, and before I went in for my first surgery to get the port put in, Joe and I got the house guest ready. Like cleaned out closets for people to put their clothes, because our family's 3,000 miles away, most of them. So we knew they're going to be getting on flights coming in. Well, they better be.
Exactly.
They better be on a flight coming to see us. So yes, they did, and it was Aerobed City for the whole time I was in treatment.
That's
and
awesome.
We just packed people in there, and we don't have a huge place, and getting all of that ready made a huge difference.
And I really should have contacted you about working out and coming up with some sort of routine. The only thing I could do was 3 days before I had chemo, I had to give myself shots.
Yeah.
And they amped me up. It was some kind of I was the worst driver during this time. I had horrible road rage. And I think, okay, if more than three people are jerks, it's me. you know, and I'd have to kind of like take it back.
Well, I think you said the magic word there. You said road rage. Well, actually, it's what they rage. Give us, it's roid rage
yeah,
because
absolutely.
Of the steroids. Yes.
Well, but I'd come home from chemo and I would be all amped up and I'd walk my dog with my neighbor. I'd be like, let's take the dogs for a walk, you know, and then 2 days later, whoo, you know.
Yeah,
and then
that's right. Into the tunnel. End of the tunnel. Yeah, you just would feel it coming on and it's like, oh, yep, oh, going into the tunnel.
And
yep, see you in a while.
Everything tastes like metal.
Oh, dirt.
Yeah, terrible.
Dirt.
The first time I tasted wine and I could actually taste the flavors, I actually wept at a restaurant.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, well, oh, I could taste the I could taste the actual flavors of things.
Right. Well, I gave up all of that.
Yeah.
I gave up. I changed everything. And cancer changed so much in my life, and I changed so much in my life. Now, as a fitness professional, I mean, I've always been healthy and always been, you know, looking for ways. I mean, I've been a weight loss coach. I was your weight loss coach. I ran
marathon
courses.
Runner,
yeah, you know, like over 25 marathons. I mean, just everything, you know, and always looking. But I was a weekend warrior with binging. I will say that. And I was a weekend warrior with, ice cream and, you know, just whatever. But the day they called me, and said, we need more images, you know. I haven't had sugar. Anything with sugar. And I'm not talking about sitting and eating a box of candies or chocolates.
No, there's
or
no sugar at all.
I'm talking like bread with sugar and this food type with sugar. Mustard with sugar.
Soy sauce.
Everything.
Isn't
everything.
That's a little extreme.
No, it's not. And
okay.
I'll tell you why. I was pathologic complete response. Guess what? I starved that cancer that was inside of me. I starved it because studies have come out that, you know, there was the most recent one that I read when I was in treatment in October 2017 was about cancer cells metabolizing sugar.
Okay.
That keeps them going and that keeps them growing. So no, it's not extreme. The thing is, cancer is extreme. And I had people during when I was going through treatment saying, I'm surprised. I thought you, of all people, would have gone the natural route. And I'd say, well, you know what? Cancer is so not natural, okay? Cancer is so not natural. And me sitting and eating some green beans and sugar snap peas is not going to kill this. You know, it's like it's so not natural. Yeah, so it was like I went for the treatment, and I let my oncology team do their job.
Oh, yeah.
Do their job, you know, and I wasn't going to, and whatever my oncologists were recommending, I trusted them because Dr. Ashuri actually worked with Dr. Slayman on the Herceptin, if you can believe
that.
It's like crazy. Yeah, the Herceptin, the drug that I helped fundraise the FDA approval for. And Dr. Miller also played a part in that. So my team was all on board with what was going on, that I was like, on board with it. You say I should do that? Sure. Okay. And then I went to school and I did everything that I had to do that was in within my control to get rid of this cancer, starve it and halt it. And I gave up all of that, which includes alcohol, because alcohol is just sugar. And there's also some really bad ingredients in alcohol. And you know, just one, the American Institute for Cancer Research states, their research states that just one glass of alcohol can increase any woman's chance of breast cancer by 5%.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes. So that's the kind of research that I kind of really dove into.
Okay, so you've done this type of research, so you know the factors involved. See, and that's something that people may not be aware of.
Yes.
Because I know I was not aware of it.
Same here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, so I've done a lot of work on that. I actually wrote my book, Another Interruption. Part two is being written right now. Part one is basically my memoir and how I made it through, which patients will find helpful. Family members will find helpful because it tells you what the cancer patient is going through. Friends will find helpful. And part two is my eating plan and my exercise routines. And I'll tell you, my best exercise when I was going through treatment was cleaning the house. And the house guests would come, as I mentioned, and they'd want to come, oh, we're coming to clean. No, I cleaned before you got here. Because on my good days, I would clean the house. And was it hard? Yes. And I remember just sitting on the floor and crying, and I don't even know what I was crying about sometimes, but I would just have to have a good boo-hoo cry, and then I would get up and continue vacuuming. You know, it's like, and I was mentioning to you guys earlier before we went on the air that one of the books that I did read was by Holly Jacob, and she wrote a fabulous book called The Silver Lining. And it was about looking at silver linings of cancer. And for me, the silver lining is, hey, chemo gave me curly hair. I never had a curl in my hair before. Now I've got this great curls, you know.
Did you shave your head, or did your hair just fall out over time?
I didn't wait for it to fall out over time. I didn't want to go through that trauma.
Same here.
Yeah, I didn't want to go through that trauma.
And then I didn't wear a wig or a hat or anything.
I had wigs, baby. Oh, yeah, I had
wigs.
Wig
shopping.
Oh, yeah, I have like six or more wigs. Oh, yeah, just so many wigs. My pink one's my favorite. Oh, yeah,
see,
wigs.
I just channel lesbian this, truck driver or art critic with not enough jewelry. But, you know, only two people asked me if I had cancer, but so many people these days do shave their heads. So
Yeah.
You can really kind of own it and let it empower you.
But I didn't really like I liked my wigs.
Oh, I loved your wigs.
Oh, yeah.
The pink one was
great. I had great, great big long ones and short ones and the pink one and the cute bob. You know, like just some outfits look better with different hairstyles, right? So
To change your makeup palette to go with the different hairs?
Oh, sometimes, yeah. You know, but you know that you've got to look at the silver linings, yes, right? And that was part of it, is looking at that. But yes, exercise. So part two of my book is going to be all of those things that
they
will help. And recipes.
You.
I redesigned all my recipes because you know I've always been a cook, Laura.
Always.
You've bought me one of my cookbooks.
I do.
And you know, so I redesigned recipes and how to cook and make desserts without sugar.
There's not a lot of information out there. Once you're finished with chemo, it's sort of like the end of confession in the Catholic Church where they go and sin no more. But you don't necessarily know how you got cancer. So saying don't get it again is sort of like, okay.
Yeah, well, that's my goal.
I think that's your answer.
That is my goal. That
to be that
Dr.
answer.
Paul Miller, my radiation oncologist, says your cancer is either turned on or it's turned off. So, hey, I like it turned off. I'm not going to turn it on anymore. So if avoiding all of these toxins in my life could possibly turn it back on, then they are not allowed in my life, including every stitch of makeup now that I use is non-toxic makeup. I went to school on everything, Laura. And this is why I wanted to do this forum here.
Sure.
So that we can help others and bring in professionals like you, David, that can help people know how do we deal with a family that's going through this. It's a whole family diagnosis.
Sure.
And for you, Laura, to talk about your journey, how different that was, because everybody's cancer is different. Somebody might be listening right now and say, I have the exact same cancer that Laura had, but their journey is going to be different than yours. You know,
I hope so.
but
kinder and gentler, I hope.
Yes, but you know, getting back to David, tell me your experience with you dealing with the families that come in or cancer patients come in. What is the first thing that you do advise them to take care of for their mental well-being?
The first thing I do is listen, because everybody's different. Everybody has different needs. It depends a lot on how well the person is doing, how much they're struggling, how much their family is struggling. And also there are all the practical things, the daily stuff that doesn't involve chemotherapy and other treatment. There's the daily functioning of the family and how that the people are able to kind of adjust to what's going on. And truthfully, it's really about hearing what they're struggling with and then basically trying to create some action plan, something they can do to help, something they can do to kind of get through it, to create hope, to create a pathway that they can follow. And everybody's different. Everybody's individualistic, as
so
you
to
said.
To be flexible. With
to
it
be
it
flexible.
To go forward.
However, it's what works for the individual people. It's sort of like the way I work in my practice is in a relatively or mostly non-judgmental, I try and be completely non-judgmental as long as somebody's not hurting somebody else, a non-judgmental way to whatever works for the people involved works as long as they both agree. If you have a couple or a family and everybody feels a certain way or wants to deal with it a certain way, then that's okay as long as ultimately the support is there.
Right.
Ultimately, the people connect with each other. Ultimately, the person feels as if they have that warmth and closeness of their family. And however that's derived, because some people are more touchy-feely than others, some people are more stoic, some people are more withdrawn.
Sure.
And it's about finding the balance that works for each individual person and family.
And Laura mentioned about her mom saying, I'm going to a support group, I'm fine, I don't need to talk about it anymore. How do you feel about support groups, and do you lead any support groups for
a situation like this? I do not lead any support groups. However, I think support groups are terrific. I think that there's nothing better in some ways than just finding people who understand.
Yeah.
And when you are diagnosed with cancer, I imagine, as I said, I have no... I cannot say I know how you feel. However, when you are diagnosed with cancer, I imagine you feel very isolated, very alone, very overwhelmed. And to have people in your circle who have experienced that, who maybe are further down the road, and you can see that they've survived,
right,
that they are on their road to recovery, that there is hope at the end of that tunnel, can be remarkably helpful,
yes.
I believe.
Yes, and I would say also eliminate the people that really bring you down in your life and keep the people around that lift you up always.
You know,
the day I was diagnosed, honestly, this is the day I was diagnosed,
yes.
We got the call and then Joe had to leave and I was alone and I thought, okay, I'm going to go in online and write my family that yes, what we thought it is, yes, I have cancer, you know. But then I did see an email from Macy's that had a shoe sale. And, you know, I thought, well, retail therapy, I wonder if those Coach sandals are on sale that I had my eye on. And you know what? They were on sale, right? Oh, yeah. So I bought them
after I was diagnosed. It was a sign.
It was a sign, you know. So I thought, I'm going to need nice shoes to wear to all these doctor's appointments now. So I got those Coach shoes in my Macy's basket and purchased those, right? And then somebody that we knew, a friend for years and years, just happened to be in the area and came to stop by. And so I thought, well, perfect. We'll tell them in person, you know. And what not to do with a cancer patient? He hugs me and says, well, we just never know how we're going to go, do we?
Oh, my God.
Let's say I've never seen that person again. That person is no longer in my life, yes. But,
That would not be part of any... any therapeutic stuff that I
would recommend. Nothing that you would recommend. We don't know how we're going to go, do we?
I was asked for copies of my medical records so somebody could make sure that they didn't get what I got.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Well, this was great. I think we're ready. We've got to wrap this up now. This has gone very fast. I really appreciate you coming in tonight.
Thank you
so much for being my very first guest on my very first time ever hosting a radio show. So I hope I was interesting enough for you, and our guests were definitely interesting enough for me. David, please tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
I have a private practice in Westlake Village, California. My name is David Schwartz. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, license number 87261. And I can be reached at my website, which is davidschwartzmft.com.
Thank you.
Awesome.
And Laura is also an amazing, talented graphic designer. She's also an incredible photographer, so you have to give your Instagram, because she's a world traveler and... her photographs are amazing. Please tell everybody how you can...
I'm a graphic designer without a website currently.
Okay.
But I am reachable at laura@laurakwick.com. And my Instagram account is laura.quick. And come visit me there.
Thank you so much.
Studying to be a docent at the zoo. So there's a lot of zoo animals on there.
That's awesome. Thank you. I'd like to thank Product Confidential for fine custom-made jewelry inspired by your imagination, crafted by master artisans. You can call them at 818-597-2601, or you can check them out on the web at productconfidential.com. I'll be back every Monday in December sitting in as guest host for Ilona Europa.
Yay.
On Accent On. Hi, Ilona. She's in London now sleeping, I think. From 6 to 7 p.m. every Monday, Pacific Standard Time. You can contact me at my Facebook page. Chrissy Lomax is my name. Chrissylomax. And you can contact me there. I'd like to close this show tonight with a song I wrote and recorded. I am a singer-songwriter. And this song I recorded in my pajamas during treatment. And the song is called I Can. And don't forget, I can. And until next week, everybody stay present.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't remember. All I know is I awoke there. Fearing faces, all the ones that really care. I'm feeling painful. I'm afraid it's so hard to see. Is this a movie? Or is this a real? Happening to me. Who am I? Where am I?
You're listening to Accent On with Ilona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.